Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You are listening to the midweek version of that Fiber Talk podcast, the twice weekly show for people who stab ground cloth with needle and thread.
Wow, we went away from the fine art.
Yeah, we don't have any classy guests, so we can just go right back to violence.
Oh, I was going to say, do we have a bad week?
Not yet.
Do we have like a publishing deadline this week? Is that what it is?
Yes, we do.
Ah,
yes, we do.
Okay, so now the truth comes out.
Yeah, it's Monday. Magazines due Thursday morning. Yeah.
Okay, now we get it.
So, yeah. A little edgy.
That's okay. Yep. Hey. That's okay. Everyone's entitled.
Yep. Got to move copy. You know how it is. Yep.
So this is the perfect time that you do like background stitches on needlepoint.
Yeah.
Right? Long borders on things, like things that don't require a lot of, you know, planning or stuff like that.
Yep. And that's what I'm doing, as a matter of fact. On the Anasazi song,
there you go.
I'm weaving thread over long strips of krynek. And very mindless, very relaxing. It's just rhythmic stitching and no thinking. Yep.
I am doing similar. I'm doing a very large areas of background stitching on a needlepoint piece. So there you go.
Yep, I know that feeling. Yeah. So, now I've made a mistake.
Okay.
Yeah, I made a mistake because I'm doing the Anasazi song by Carol Lake, and it's beautiful, and it really, the woman has talent. There's no one would ever dispute that. And it's just a beautiful piece, but there are three of them. There's song, and then there's spirit, and something else.
So you have all the charts that you're going to stack up.
Well, Carol Lake's going to be a guest coming up here.
Okay.
And so I was preparing things for the recording, and I made the mistake of going to her site and looking at the three Anasazi charts.
Okay.
I'll be buying the other two. Yeah, I have to have all three now. Yeah. I have to have all three. I just have to. So,
that's fair.
Yep. And then I showed them to Marga, and she said, then you could see, all right, now where can we hang these three? And, So, yeah, I got to stop this.
That's okay. I had a similar event. I was on Facebook, and, you know, after a while you subscribe to a bunch of different stitching groups and different people are posting different things.
Right.
And I happened to come across a Gan Rogers post. Somebody posted Gan Rogers is having an anniversary sale.
Yes.
And she had posted, she had done an Elizabeth piece, I guess some time ago, and she did sort of a sequel. So it's an Elizabeth II piece, and it's all sort of Tudor roses and black work and a little bit of cut work in it. And the piece itself isn't going to be released until October, the chart. And I guess it's a chart and a kit.
Right.
But she's taking deposits on it now, and I think it's selling out pretty darn quickly. And I saw it. And I did a U, which is I saw it and said, oh, this is beautiful. And I have no idea when I'm going to stitch it, but I absolutely adore it and I must have it. So I'm going to reserve it immediately.
Well, I'll tell you a story about that.
Yeah. Okay? There's very few pieces that I do that with where I say, I must have this immediately, and I did, and it is. And every time I go back to it, I have no regrets at all because I look at it and I say, oh, I'm so in love with this piece. It's beautiful.
Yep. I knew. Here's the story. Okay. So I saw that piece. Somebody posted it the other day.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I got to have that because I love her stuff.
Yes.
I got to have that whenever it becomes available. Okay. And she mentioned in a response that it was going to be available soon. And so this is Monday. So yesterday, Saturday, I was at the drag races with our son, Kevin.
Yeah.
And you texted me. Well, the reception was really horrible. So I never saw the picture, but I didn't need to see the picture. I knew exactly what you were after.
Yes, because I texted you.
Yep.
You need to look at this Gay Ann Rogers piece. I just ordered it immediately, sight unseen.
I knew what it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't need to see the picture. I knew. I just chuckled, put my phone back in my pocket, watched the drag racing. Yep.
Yeah. So if anyone who hasn't popped into the Gay Ann Rogers website for her sale, you might want to. And I'm comfortable saying so because I've already ordered mine. And I'm not ashamed to say that I might not be saying that if I hadn't already put a reserve on it.
Yeah, her stuff goes fast. And you remind me, I was going to order twice today. I was going to order it and I forgot. So
it's beautiful. It's probably it really
too late.
Is.
It's probably too late now, but.
It is really, and it's special. It is special to me because it's
right up your alley.
Piece. It is. It is, and it's full of Tudor roses, and my husband has Tudor roses worked all through his tattoo, which is all literary references. And both of us have sort of have tattoos that are very British in reference, I would say, in different ways. So, and his has a very prominent Tudor rose in it. So I saw that, and immediately I was like, this needs to happen. So... yeah, that took approximately 40 seconds to say, yep, that's happened.
Give me that card.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. She does beautiful work.
And
the one, what was the Downton Abbey one that I stitched from Gay Ann Rogers?
Lady Edith.
Oh, I'm still extra proud of that one, the way it came out. And
I remember.
Yeah, and Pepper Pot Silks and the instructions and the design, and it all just came together so nicely. And that's framed on a wall in the house.
So here, I'll give you another little tie-in. So my, because nobody cares about any of this, my tattoo is all flowers. It's all English flowers.
Right.
And the flowers are all... from photographs that I took at Highclere Castle, which is, of course, where they filmed Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, that's there right. You got to see the deal. Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
And if anyone has ever wanted to go, you should absolutely go. It is absolutely spectacular. It's beautiful there.
Yeah. Because that's a private home, right? Private home that they allow tours?
It is. It is. It's a private home. They allow tours to go through. They have some events and things there, and have, obviously they're not filming anymore. But yeah, it's been a private home for centuries, and they still live there, and it's beautiful. The surrounding area is beautiful, and not too far from there is where the book Watership Down. Well, it didn't take place. Obviously, it's a novel. It's fiction, but the person who wrote Watership Down lived there, and he used to drive through the countryside telling the story, making up the story for his children. And the places, all of the places in Watership Down are real. So when we went, we drove through sort of the areas, all the areas mentioned in Watership Down, which aren't very far from Highclere Castle. So, and that was a book that was very special to me when I was in fifth and sixth grade about. So it was really kind of neat to sort of drive through that area and see actual Watership Down. And we have pictures from there and the, you know, the farms and the different places that are mentioned in the book. Because when he was driving his kids around, he would make up stories about the rabbits in the book and all the different places that they lived. So that was kind of neat. So that whole trip was kind of a pretty special trip in a special place.
Yep.
And that was a little bit of the inspiration of the tattoo that is on my arm. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. And so you could buy the Gay Ann Rogers chart and know that there would be no objection from Michael. You had him.
Yes.
You had him. Yep, because that's what you put that on hold, and then she delivers in October, I think it was, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep, and it's kitted, the whole thing is there, so.
Yeah.
Which is nice, you know, it's just a little bit of a convenience to not have to go kit something for yourself.
Yes. Well, I need to order. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go order.
You should.
Okay, now, last week we started this thing. We're helping Michelle Garrett, Bendy Stitchy, and I learned she wrote to me, and she's, because she listens, and Bendy has to do with a former life doing yoga that she keeps the name, I think it's personal pressure to get back to it, if I recall correctly. So that's where the Bendy comes in, and the Stitchy's obvious. So, but anyway, Michelle Garrett, who is raising money for Alzheimer's research for a walk she's doing, and so we're buying needle minders from the Imperfectly Perfect Stitcher Heather at IPS needle minders on Etsy. Link on the page for this podcast. $7, and all $7 goes to the fundraising. And Heather put up a couple days after last week's podcast that there would be a little delay while she got supplies and made needle minders because, basically, I think because of us. So let's go, folks.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Buy more needle minders. $7 a piece. All $7 go. I bought. They're on their way. I bought Alzheimer's, and then I bought one of the keys.
Mm-hmm.
And was some kind of an insect or butterfly. I don't remember which. But so I bought three.
Oh, they have moths.
Yeah, the moths. That's what it was. So I bought three needle minders, so $20 worth, and they're on their way. So let's go, folks. Break the bank here. Make Michelle the biggest money raiser by far for this walk. Let's do some serious damage. Yep. Make Heather glue magnets for around the clock.
All right, Heather, it's a challenge.
It's asphyxiated with glue vapors.
Wait a minute. I don't know if that's actually benefiting anybody, because if we're helping Alzheimer's, but we're giving Heather a brain injury from glue, I think that's kind of a wash.
It says right on the package, use glue only with good ventilation. Safety first. Safety first.
All right, we're going to have to trust Heather to do it the right way.
Yeah. Let's make Heather have to bring in family members to help her put together needle minders.
Or a respirator. Cause,
yes.
Yeah, you, know, you can get them from
one of those big double nozzled.
They can be comfortable. I've worn them for work. They're perfectly fine.
All right, so Imperfectly, IPS needle minders on Etsy, $7 for the Alzheimer's. All $7 go to the Michelle Garrett, Bendy Stitchy fundraising effort for Alzheimer's. And anything else you buy helps Heather pay for classes for to further her education. So everybody's winning here, and you get cool needle minders.
Yes.
Which you're going to buy anyway. You know, that's the thing. Come on, you're going to buy needle minders anyway. So just buy them from Heather. There you have it. So let's see what else we got. Oh, we're both now going to be at Sassy Jack's in August when Nicola Parkman is there. So, yes. Marga and I and Christine. And we're twisting arms to get the other half of Christine here.
We are.
So, yes. So August 18, 19, and 2021, Nicola Parkman. This is a sampler that she's only doing for Sassy Jacks, doing a presentation there. And last I heard, there were still like single digits, but a few seats left. So let's go, folks. Mm-hmm. Help out. We cannot have Nicola coming all the way over here and have empty seats. We can't have that.
No.
So, yes. August, Sassy Jacks in North Carolina. Yes, North Carolina. Yes. It'll be hot, but you'll be inside. You don't care. So let's see. What else? Who else can we plug here? We got anybody else we can plug? I think that's about it, huh? Yeah, I think so. Yep. That's it. No more plugging available. So I wanted to talk about Nicola Parkman, Hands Across the Sea Samplers, did a video. There have been two or three posts in the Sarah Brazier stitch along, and you see the posts other places, but in the it's kind of magnified in the Sarah Brazier thing because people are having trouble getting silk and having trouble getting linen, And I think that's all coming together here in the next couple of weeks. Expect some linen this week, I think. But there is an option to do DMC. And somebody posted the other day that she used the word sheepish about using DMC. And I was one of the respondents, but, you know, don't be. Because that DMC, those DMC colors on Sarah Brazier are vivid and beautiful. And Nicola did a video addressing that issue of you should be proud of your work no matter what materials you use.
Yeah. And actually, I think, and you're welcome to disagree, of all the people that have been posting pictures of the sampler on the Stitch Along Facebook page, and that's one of the reasons I actually like this Stitch Along, there is a temptation for people to sort of disregard the Stitch Along if they're not doing it because, well, I'm not doing this piece, so it's not relevant to me. It's absolutely relevant for lots of reasons. One of which is there are a lot of things to be learned, and this is one of them. You can look at the different ways that materials make a difference in a piece because you have, you know, 600 plus people stitching the exact same piece using different materials, right? You have DMC, you have silks. You have different people using different kinds of silks. Not everyone's using the Soie d'Alger silks. Other people are using different kinds of silks. You have different people using, you know, the suggested Lakeside Linen color. I think it was a khaki color, but not everyone is choosing that. Some people are using the platinum. I think that's what you were going to use.
Yep.
And then other people are not using that at all. So you get to see what happens when people diverge from the suggested materials and what impact that divergence has. So you can then take that information and use that to see if you want to stitch a piece, but you're nervous about, oh, I don't know if I don't do what is prescribed by the designer, I don't know how it's going to come out. Well, pop into the Stitch Along and you'll get to see what happens if you use a different fiber, if you use a different brand of fiber, if you use a different brand of ground cloth. It's a huge resource to see what's going to happen. As far as the fibers are concerned, what we've learned from the DMC versus silk, the going sort of idea with silk versus DMC is that silk is going to be better because it's silk and silk is a finer fiber. What I think we've seen so far with this is that the DMC fibers have been more vibrant a color.
Yes.
So in person, it may be more lustrous. If I had to guess, I would say that they may, and I'm going to guess, hypothesize, it may be more lustrous and smooth. But when it's a cross stitch, I don't know that that's going to matter as much. I would guess that if you're going to do something like needle painting or surface embroidery or a satin stitch or something like that or long and short stitch, a silk is going to matter. But then again, Royal School doesn't advocate silk at all. They use cotton. When you're doing cross stitch, I don't think that's going to matter because it's not going to reflect light the same way. What we're seeing here is when people post pictures of the DMC versus the silk, the DMC colors are a lot more bright and people seem to like the results from the DMC better. So I don't think, you know, it, maybe it's just a, it's snooty is the wrong word. This idea that because it's silk and silk is harder to get or more expensive, it's better. I think we should discard that idea in this case and just look at the result. So put aside the cost and look at the result and see which looks better to your eye and choose that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. And that's what people have been doing. There's a whole variety of ground cloth that is being used. and DMC, and then several different silk threads that people have chosen and made their own conversions. And everybody, that's the fun thing, is everybody's trying it, and I can't wait to see people get further on to see all the differences, because I haven't seen one yet that I would turn down. I mean, they're all beautiful. They just are just slightly different looks. And in this video that Nicola did, it was really interesting to me. One, we were having a little back and forth, just Nicola and I, and she said, you know, quite frankly, it doesn't matter what it's stitched on. She says, I get excited to see them. I just love seeing that, you know, the sampler stitched. And you know, you can certainly appreciate that. But she showed two in the video. She shows, you got to watch the video. She shows two samplers that are as tall as her, massive, big things, that were done on Aida cloth. And they were done 10 years apart because she said she didn't know that linen was an option.
Mm-hmm.
She just simply didn't know. And so she thought it was Aida for cross stitch, and that was it. So she has these two gorgeous samplers, you know, and it's, they're beautiful, big, beautiful things that are on Aida, you know, where, you know, some people would be made to be embarrassed or feel embarrassed. No way, no way. Just look at those two and be proud of that. You know, that's beautiful stitching and beautiful colors and beautiful samplers. And, you know, that's what she used. Now, of course, she discovered linen and, you know, in a lot of ways, silk is very nice, but you pay for that silk too. And, in this case, you know, I was looking at, as I check on the Sarah Brazier thing, probably more than I need to during a day. And there were two people who have begun stitching that were standing out for me. It just, every time I look, I click on the picture and blow it up because I want to see it. And I hadn't paid any attention to who they are or where they are or what they were using. And for this podcast, I thought, all right, I'm going to mention their names and I'm going to mention what ground cloth and what threads they're using. You know, just because they have just stood out, that just look beautiful, and they've made a lot of progress.
Mm-hmm.
And so one is Henny Buis, B-U-I-S, and I'm butchering these names. She's from the Netherlands. It turned out they're both from the Netherlands.
Okay.
And Henny has been making good. She's all the way across the top and starting her way down. She's stitching on off-white 40 count using DMC thread. And then the other is Lise. I'm sure it's Norwegian for Lisa. Lise Vanderberg. And she's from Nyland, N-I-J-L, mm-hmm. Nyland in the Netherlands. She's doing it on antique white. And again, she's using DMC. And every time those two post, it's like, wow. Oh, wow. Look at that. You know, and then I compare it to a couple of people. Well, I'm using DMC. Don't tell anybody. No, tell everybody.
Yeah.
Because it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. And these two are cooking along with this thing, and they're going to have a couple of samplers, you know, stand out in front of the house, and, you know, anybody that goes by, hey, look at what I did. Beautiful stuff. It was just so bizarre. They're both from the Netherlands, and I just hadn't paid any attention. But yeah, they're cooking right along with this thing, and it's just so much fun. And then what they both had answered was this question I've had about reproduction samplers of, do we always have to use the colors that are make it look old? You know, can't we use a white or an off-white? And they're using off-whites, and by golly, I think the next one I do, it's going to be an off-white, just because. Yeah.
Well, someone I know is using dark blue, so.
I know. I cannot wait to see. Cannot wait to see this. Cannot wait to see. So how is that? How is that dyeing going? You did the first run. Were you're going to try a second one? Have you had a chance?
Yeah, I did. It didn't go well.
Oops.
So I'll tell you how it went. So I went through the whole process, and I very, very carefully monitored the chemical process, and I hung it up to, to dry. And my husband walked in and said, I thought it was going to be darker. And I said, yeah, so did I. So I'm going to try a RIT dye because I'm going to keep going until I get it the color I want. And that's just how it's going to go, because I now it's just a battle. I'm going to battle this linen until I get it. What, you know, if at this point, if I have to bleach this and use it for something else and buy a dark linen, that's what I'm going to do, because now I'm mad. because I have an idea in my head of what I want this to look like, and I don't want to compromise. So we're going to keep going until I get it to be what I want it to be.
Well, and you can't let the chemistry beat you either. This cannot happen. No.
And it might be just that the color that I chose is just not dark enough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to make it work. but the more I work with it, the more I have an idea in my head of what I want it to be. But that said, because it's taking so long, I think what I'm going to do, the piece I bought is a yard. So it's bigger than I need it to be. What I think I'm going to do this weekend, or perhaps earlier, is cut the fabric to be the size I need it to be and bind the edges, and then take a small chunk off, because what I intended to do was to take a piece off as a doodle cloth so I could start getting an idea of, for the border, what size thread I wanted to do to get the satin stitch. Mm-hmm. Because if that was going to be a true metallic, I wanted to get an idea of, was I going to use a blending filament? Was I going to use a number 4 acrylic? Was I going to use a number 8? Was I going to use something different? I don't know. Even if I have to start that on a fabric that isn't the right color, at least I can get an idea of the right size so I can start sourcing it. Because no matter what metallic I use, with the size of the border, it's not going to be cheap. So I want to be able to see if I can get that fiber either secondhand or do something to sort of mitigate the cost of it.
Yeah.
So the sooner I can figure out at least what fiber that has to be, the better off I will be. So I'm going to do that and just sort of noodle around with different fibers, different dye types, and maybe, you know, cut a little bit, because I do have a little bit of extra fabric, cut swatches and try different methods with different swatches until I figure out what I need to do with the whole fabric. Because the last thing I'm going to do is to just keep dyeing the entire thing and ruin it.
Yeah, at some point it can't take a beating anymore, right?
Correct, right. So I'm just going to keep going until I figure something out, because right now it's a lovely color, but it's just not the color that I want it to be. And really the hurdle is that in that border, you know how it has that really pretty sort of slate blue color?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's that color. That's exactly the color that the fabric is. And I don't want that color to get lost.
Yeah.
So either, you know, you're talking about, do we have to use the colors that are in the, you know, can we change the colors of the threads, and can we change the colors of the ground cloth? And to me, I've already tossed all of it aside, and I don't want to toss everything.
Right.
So I don't want to change that. And some things I'm going to have to change a little bit so that they stand out on a dark cloth. So, but I don't want to change that. I'd like to keep some things true, but if I stitch a dark, a slate color in that border on a slaty colored fabric, it's going to get lost, and I don't want to do that. So I'm going to keep trying. And because we delayed the start, you know, the official start date a little bit, I have some time to play. So I'm going to continue to do that. Because, you know, and the other thing is I'm learning a lot.
Yeah. Well, Yeah.
Which is that, you know, things don't work the way you want them to. The other thing I'm almost considering doing, especially if I can cut, you know, little sort of 2-inch squares, is in the lab I have FD&C colors, which is what you would use for food coloring or, you know, regular like household product colorings.
Here we go. She's breaking out the big guns. In the lab, I have.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know that these are intended for these, and I don't know that they're color fast. And I work in a natural products company, so we don't use these in any of our products. We only use natural colors, but we have them just as sort of benchmark colors. So they're just kind of sitting around doing nothing. So I'm half tempted to sort of figure out the chemistry of those and see if they would be color fast. And, you know, I have nothing to lose on a 1-inch square piece of linen anyway. So I don't know. I might try them and see if they work.
Here we go. The big guns. Look out.
Well, you know, and the only problem
Erlen Meyer
is that
flasks and distillation columns.
It's just really dishes, you know.
Magnetic stirs and centrifuge. Look out.
It's none of those things. It's squirting some dye into a bowl with some fabric and seeing what happens. The only problem with it, it's not particularly reproducible for anyone other than me. Other than that, well, actually, that's not true, because really all they are is food coloring, because it's basically what you would get in food coloring that you'd buy in the store. It's just really concentrated.
Yep.
Because food coloring in the store is just artificial FD&C color. So, I don't know.
Hey.
It's things I have available to me, and I might try them, because I have an end goal in mind, and I'm going to use whatever tools I have available, because I don't need to reproduce this again.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm.
So it would be nice if I could, but if I get to a point where I can't, I won't. So my next step is Rit Dye. I'm just going to go to a craft store and pick up what I can. And if that doesn't work, I'll try other things, and we'll see what happens.
Now, there's, you know, that's interesting. There's nothing wrong with Rit Dye. I mean, that's
no.
That's quality stuff, right? I mean, because sometimes I think it's like, you know, like the average dye in the dyeing world. But that's serious stuff, right?
It's my experience with it is that it generally is not as color fast as some other dyes that you would use for things like tie dyeing that you intend to be permanent. So other dyes that I've used tend to be a little bit more color fast and impart a more intense color. And I don't know what it is about this that it's just not doing that. And it may be that I just purchased too light of a color, or I'm not, you know, something happened along the way that it's just not working. I don't know. Something isn't working. So Rit Dye is something I can pick up on my way home from work tomorrow. So I'm going to try it.
Yep.
You know, it's available.
Yeah. And not expensive. So.
And not expensive. And I can mix, you know, a black with a dark blue and see what happens. You know, so that's one of the things. I was really lucky to work with someone at work who trained for many years in cosmetics in color. So her expertise was doing eyeshadows and lipsticks and things like that in color matching. So when you buy an Estee Lauder lipstick, every single time you buy a black currant lipstick, it is exactly the same color. And her job was to design that lipstick, but then to make sure that every single time it was exactly the same color, and not like close, but identical. So I learned from her how to do that. So that is a really, really fine skill. It's not only... It's something that's learned over years. And it's not only knowing that the colors that you're looking at are not the same, that the two blacks that you're looking at are both not black, and they're not black in different ways, but what it is about them that you can make them the same. So this is not black because it's too blue, and this is not black because it's too green, and what you need to do to correct them. So, and, you know, and she's funny because she's like, you know, you can, you know, the problem is that then you look at a couch and all three cushions on the couch aren't the same color.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
you know, because they're all from different dye lots. So for her to go into a a fabric store or a thread store, she'd look in into a bin of DMC floss, and it would be,
yeah,
you know, she'd start having a seizure because none of them would be the same, you know, because she's so finely tuned to color, right? So,
yeah, walks into a furniture store, no one will wait on her. No, not her.
Right, exactly. So, I have the benefit of a little bit of that training, but not too much. So it doesn't disturb me that much. But the benefit of that is that I can kind of look at things and see a little bit more color than yeah. I would have without that training. And I'm really, really grateful to her for taking the time to teach me a lot of that. So I'll be able to go into the sort of array of dyes and look at the different colors that they offer and see which ones I need to be able to mix, because a lot of times it's not what you think. Right. Like, you know, you think you want a purple and you need to mix, you know, red and blue, but really what you need to mix are blue and black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's weird things like that. So we're going to try round three. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, it's a fun ride no matter what. No matter what.
Yeah.
I have to talk about it, and I apologize. I don't write down and remember the names of people who offer this stuff. I mean, I just don't. I'm reading it and I move on, and then the idea sticks with me. But there was somebody posted in one of the Facebook groups the other day, and I've had this experience, or I have this experience, when I'm using my scroll frames and you pull it really tight, you always feel like there could be something pulling from the sides to tighten it in the left-right direction.
Yes.
Which is what slate frames offer, is
mm-hmm.
pulling on all sides. And I've wondered many times, you know, how could you pull that off? How could you get left-right tension on a scroll frame? And then the first thing you think is, all right, I'll take some heavy thread, cord, whatever, and thread it through the sides of the linen and wrap it around the support bars on the left and right side. And you think, all right, well, that would work. You know, I could get nice tension left and right. And then take it a step further. All right, now if I have to scroll up, you know, if I'm ready to move, turn the scrolls to get to fresh area, then you have to undo it all and redo it all again.
Yeah.
And then if you relax, like usually if I'm not going to stitch for a couple of days, I'll relax the scroll frame so there's no tension on the linen. And it's like, all right, then how much fiddling am I going to have to do to start to stitch again?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that idea is functional, but a pain in the butt. Somebody posted the other day a solution that I thought was about as elegant as you can get. And this will require me to go to Joanne's, which is going to open up that can of worms again. But they used mitten clips, like for little kids.
Yes, I saw that.
And Velcro. And clip onto the linen. And this way I understood it. Then use the Velcro to adjust to pull tight left and right on the linen to get your tension left and right. And then up and down is the scroll. And I thought that was brilliant and would cost essentially nothing. So I thought that was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Have to give it a try. Now, I'm not sure how you can connect the Velcro to the mitten clips, but it can't be too hard.
Well, okay. Hold on and help me understand. Where is the Velcro coming in? Because why can't you do the mitten clips and so clip once on the fabric, swing it around the edge of the scroll frame and clip it again on the fabric.
Well, my understanding was that from the picture was that the Velcro, by having Velcro to wrap around the upright sides, gave you the fine adjustment. So you could clip on either side of the linen, and then use the Velcro to pull as tight as you wanted.
Okay.
You know, and then connect the Velcro, and you could adjust back and forth till you got the linen tight, mm-hmm. left to right like you want. that seemed a whole lot more usable on a day-to-day basis than lacing it.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't know, depending on how tall your side pieces are, you'd need two or three, I would think. But, because I have Millennium frame, I don't feel like it has to be pulled all that hard left to right, but I sure would like it to have some tension on it.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. One of the things when I was working on a scroll frame that I had a piece on for a while was that after some time, the middle of the piece, so it's a scroll frame that you stitch to sort of a mesh at the roll part at the top, right?
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was at the edges, so the middle stayed pretty taut, but the edges started to get a little not as taut. And it seemed like it just didn't, I guess the stitching got a little weak, and just over time it didn't stay as tight. So what I ended up doing over time as the piece went on and I was stitching it was I would go back and unroll one end and stitch it tighter at the edges.
Mm.
And, and if I was lazy and I didn't feel like, you know, restitching it, I would just go back in with a pin, just like a regular ball head pin, and just pin it a little tighter. And that ended up pulling the edges super tight.
Oh, okay.
So that was actually just a quick fix. So instead of pulling it in a horizontal direction, you were pulling it vertically, but it sort of served the same purpose. Mm-hmm. So you were pulling it vertically a little tighter. And I don't know, I'm thinking about it now, it didn't seem to distort it. It seemed to just correct a natural sort of weakness that was happening over time.
Because that your scroll frame, you were sewing it or basting it to that twill binding tape stuff?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah, and after a while, just the very end seemed to just kind of
lose it,
just get floppy. So I'd go back and sort of tighten it up by pinning it at the edges, and that would correct the problem. It would snap back into tension.
Yeah. See, my original scroll frame was one of those, and I had the same experiences. Like, it would, after a while, it just wouldn't get tight. I started double basting. I would use.
And did that help?
Yes. Because I forget exactly how I did it, but I would go across and then come back, and that seemed to hold it better. It wouldn't, like, it's like the twill tape gives way.
Yeah.
So, I did
that. Maybe it just stretches over time, and it's easier to stretch at the edges.
I think that's part of it. Yeah, it just stretches. Yeah. So that's what I like about and I'm not going to remember the name, the guy that Vana uses. I hate that. Anyway, his frames where he has, they're like tacks. And his scroll rods are split in half, and they're tacks in there. So when you close them together, it clamps right down and holds that linen.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. Why can't I think of his name? Roller frame.
Yeah.
Yes. And so he has a really good thing. And then now the Millennium frames, there's a slot that you shove the linen down in, and then you put a dowel through that slot. And then as you pull tight, it pulls the cloth, pulls the dowel up toward the opening and wedges it. So then it won't give.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't give. That's one of the things I like the most about those, is it's easier to set up. Because I always hated starting something on the scroll frame and having to baste it on. And I never got it straight. It just seemed, you know, it seems like I was always struggling to get it straight. And stitching through that heavy tape, oh, man.
An upholstery needle might help.
Now, see, that it would, now, if I'd thought about these things, see, that would, would be a good thing. I didn't. I just used my stitching needle. So, hurt my fingers. It was awful. It was just awful. Yeah. All right. We're done.
Okie doke.
Sunday, Jeanette Douglas of Jeanette Douglas Designs up there in Calgary. Terrific conversation with a talented lady who does some really unique stuff. So that's our Sunday guest is Jeanette. And one more reminder. The podcast, the people who know podcasts say to remind people to subscribe after every podcast. So subscribe on WeTalkFiber.com. And at the end of each page, there's a place to subscribe, and then you get a notification. Or if you watch us on FlossTube, just subscribe there, and then you'll get notification. And I had just take a minute here. Had somebody ask the other day, it was on Stitch Mania, there was a post about what podcast people listen to. And somebody asked about how do you listen to podcasts? And, you know, we forget. We do this all the time. We forget that people don't know. And so for us, and I just for Fiber Talk, it's WeTalkFiber.com. FiberTalk.com was not available. So it's WeTalkFiber.com. And if you just go there, for every page, every podcast has a page, and on there is a player. And you just click on the little arrow, and it plays. And you can listen. So that's one way. The easiest way, I think, is on your phone or your tablet or your computer is to use the podcast app. Use a podcast app. It doesn't matter. iTunes or in iOS, in the Apple one, there's a podcast app right in your phone and right in your tablet. I assume that's the way it is in Android. You use Android, so I assume there's some podcast app for you, right? Built in?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So you can use that, or Stitcher is one, Podbean, there's a whole bunch of them, you know, apps that you can get. And all you do is sign into those things. They're free. And then you search for Fiber Talk, and we'll come up. And then if you hit subscribe on there, then every time there's a new podcast, then it will just simply be downloaded to your device, and you'll get a notification. So you don't have to do anything. After you set up that first thing and subscribe, then it just automatically comes to your phone or your tablet or whatever. And so that's, to me, that's the easiest way, is then you just feeds. And then, like, for instance, with iTunes, with the Apple podcast app, one of the tricks I've learned is when you listen to a podcast and, like, we're done talking and the music starts, let the music run out. Because if you do, then it will delete it automatically for you. So you won't build up a bunch of podcasts that you've listened to and wonder why you ran out of space. It'll delete it automatically. So always let it run all the way out, and then you don't have to think about it. And it's real easy to listen to podcasts, and there's a ton of them, an absolute ton on just about every subject under the planet, on the planet, under the sun, wherever you are. Just about anything you'd be interested in. Really, really some good stuff. There's a lot of podcasts that people got going and then just kind of quit. And there's some that, some of the top ones, you know, they're big money makers and they keep going, but, it's a fun area. And it's a nice thing when you're stitching to listen in the car, especially if you're by yourself. But even when Margaret and I are traveling, in the car, we'll put on a podcast and, you know, I want to say something to Margaret, we stop it. But we mm-hmm. really enjoy listening to them, and it really helps pass the time. You know, if you commute on a train, oh, I listen to podcasts whenever I have to go to Chicago on the train for something. Oh, earbuds in, podcast on. Kill the time for me. Thank you.
Yep.
So, yeah. So that's how you do it if you don't know. And, of course, I'm saying this to people who listen to podcasts because they're listening to this. But it's really easy. It really is. And they're all free. You know, you don't have to pay for any of them. So, all right. That's enough now. So, okay. Jeanette Douglas, Sunday. We'll be back Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Okay, take care.